If you need to contact Narcotics Anonymous or are interested in our sponsorship Behind the Walls program, please contact ARSC Regional H&I, P.O. Box 1351, Phoenix, Arizona 85001. NA literature can be found on the tablets in the Adovo app by searching for Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous does not endorse and is not affiliated with the tablet manufacturer, the software, or the institution.
Good morning and welcome back to the Arizona Region Recovery Discussions. Today, we have a guest speaker who's going to share his experience, strength, and hope with us. My name's Ryan. I'm an addict, and I would like to introduce Ishmael.
Good morning, everyone. Buenos dias and quali tonali. That's good morning in our native language of Nahua. And my name is Ishmael, and I'm an addict in recovery. And I want to give thanks to my creator for another breath of life and also for my clean time. I'll say my clean time. My clean date is May 15, 1994. And, you know, just like everyone, I want to thank everyone here for this service. You know, H&I has always been a backbone of this program also, you know, which we give hope to individuals who are incarcerated or can't be with their families. And, you know, it's a program of freedom and self and God and service. And I just want to thank the committee here for allowing me to share my experience, strength, and hope. I want to start off by saying that I love Narcotics Anonymous. And I say that because of the life that I created within the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm originally from downtown Los Angeles. I grew up 2 miles away from 2 miles from Dodger Stadium. And I grew up in this distinguished neighborhood in Northeast, which is downtown, downtown Avera Street, Chinatown area, Union Station. You know, that was where I grew up. I grew up in the housing projects, William Meade housing projects. And, you know, not knowing that the way my life was going to be, we were there 18 years. I'm the middle child. I have a couple of older brothers and a couple of younger siblings. And, you know, I've always felt isolated. I have always felt very timid growing up. And I say that, you know, because the addiction started afterwards, but the behavior was already, it was a lot of learned behavior at home. I grew up in a very domestic, violent home. My father was a full-blown alcoholic. Rest his soul. He's been deceased for 10 years already, my father. But he's part of my story, and I'm going to mention his name. His name was Francisco Robles, from the state of Jalisco, Guadalajara, Jalisco. And, you know, my father had a lot of generational trauma from his father, which he never spoke about. And of course, that gets translated to his children. And so before even using, there was a lot of that learned behavior and generational trauma. But I just want to say that, Anything's possible. I as a child, as a kid, as a as an I've always felt out of place, out of place because of my brown skin. I was actually I was part of an experiment back in the late 70s, early 80s, where the a lot of the inner child community, any inner city neighborhoods were shipped to a to the valley. We were shipped to the valley, and we dealt with a lot of discrimination, racism, we didn't know back then what it was, but I'm a late bloomer. I didn't start using at 9 years old or 10 years old, I actually started using, just like a lot of individuals in the program, recreational smoking weed. I was about 14 years old when I started using, and I started using just to suppress a lot of these feelings that I had, and I didn't want to show my feelings. I grew up with, in an environment, in a household where you didn't show weakness or you didn't show feelings. That's what my father was taught from his dad. That in Spanish, he would say, "Los hombres no lloran, men don't cry." So I wasn't given the opportunity to express my feelings or how I felt. And, so when I started smoking weed at a early age, I was one of the first ones in my with my siblings, that my older siblings and my younger siblings, that I started being rebellious. And I started being rebellious because of the domestic violence that I used to see in my home with my father and my mother. So I used to when I would smoke weed and come home high, my parents started seeing the difference in my behavior. At 15 years old, I got my first tattoo, on my chest, after ditching school. And those are the things that started happening in our home. And I remember my older brother saying, "Aren't you scared of dad? Aren't you scared that he's gonna hit you?" If and at the time, you know what? I didn't give a shit no more. I didn't care. And I just wanted to escape, being growing up in poverty, parents always fighting for money. And the alcoholism. I remember my dad would never come home in the weekends. He would spend his paycheck, and my mother would have to figure out how to make ends meet. So she would pawn her jewelry, so we can never get ahead. And I remember being very resentful towards my father, and of course that resentment turn into anger. So as time progressed, I started using a little bit more at about 16. Then I started being rebellious at school, where I didn't even want to go to school no more. I ended up dropping out in the ninth grade. In the ninth grade, because in the 10th grade, I went to 10 high schools throughout the county of LA. 10 high schools for either fighting or disrespecting the teachers or authority, and that was out of control. At that time, when I actually turned 15, a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to go look at this car that he had been stripping. And I was 15 years old. I told my friend, "Yeah, let's go." And I went. I went to this site we were gonna go ahead and strip, the tires so we can sell them and make a little bit of money. And then we get busted. We get busted. My friend tells me, he was my childhood friend. He tells me, you know what? My dad, he was scared. He was very fearful of his father. He said, my dad's gonna kick my ass. And I didn't do nothing. I was just present. I was just there with him. And then he asked me, do you mind if you take all the blame? And I'm like, I don't give a shit. Tell him I did everything. So I ended up going to juvenile hall, for a day. And my parents picked me up, took me out, and that's where my criminal activity started, at 15 years old. And that's because I didn't care. I didn't care what my parents thought, or I didn't care if I was gonna get, hit by my father, and then it started progressing, and it got to a point where, I was already carrying weapons, and I always talk about being suicidal and homicidal. I wanted someone to hurt me, or I wanted to hurt someone else. And I remember those feelings, where I wanted to have a shootout with the cops so they can, so my family, can feel for me and get the attention. So at 17 years old, my girlfriend at the time was pregnant, and we were both 17 years old. And that's what happened at the projects. I just the cops I saw the cops there, and I just took out a rifle, and I just kind of shot a couple rounds just to kind of get their attention. And there was a big old mess, helicopters. I didn't even they didn't I didn't get arrested, I didn't get caught, but my parents decided to send me to Chicago, Illinois. And I ended up going to Chicago. Well, it's a small town called Waukegan in North Chicago, the border of Wisconsin and Illinois, to get away from all that violence and drama and drugs. And I ended up going. I was 17 years old. My son was about a few, maybe a couple weeks old. My oldest son. And a month later, my wife decided to join me in May of 1987. And being there with my brother, I had another half brother that he was 10 years older than me. Supposedly, I was supposed to go over there, work with him in roofing and construction. And man, my addiction just took off there, We used to get high every morning before we go to work. We would go to work for a couple hours, and then we go out and party for the rest of the day. It got to the point where my wife got tired of remember I said about the domestic violence with my wife, I mean with my mother and my father? Well, that's what started happening with me. It's a shameful event, but that's part of my reality. That learned behavior, where you start doing the same things that your parents, what you saw in your parents, that's what I did. And she finally left Illinois and came back to LA. And my son at the time was 3 months old. And then my brother ended up going over there, one of my older brothers, to Chicago. And our addiction just got very heavy, we were doing roofing for Colombian, and my brother would tell me, right now we're gonna get high. You see all those people going in and out? He goes, we're gonna get high, we're gonna get loaded, And man, I remember just being so out of it, being out of it. I don't I didn't use for a long time. I'm one of the I'm one of the lucky individuals. I say that because I didn't end up in prison. I could have ended up in prison, just like my father and my two brothers at the same time. They were all locked up at the same time in 1990. I didn't do no time. I did wino time at the county jail. The county jail where I grew up in LA downtown, the Twin Towers, the housing projects, what separates the county jail and the housing projects is the railroad tracks. So when I got after doing a week at the county jail, all I did was chop the fence and I was home. But I didn't do a lot of time. I always say wino time, but my parents, I mean my father, I never met anyone that had over 14 DUIs. That was my father, 14 DUIs. My brother, my younger brother, he's been in and out for over 30 years. Since he was 14 years old, I'm one of the lucky ones. The only federal and state number that I have is for my business. That's it's funny to say that, but I have my federal number and my state number, and I hear guys in the program talking about I was a B number and I was a C number, I own my own business. I own my own business. I own my own tax business, and I also do financial literacy. So I have a nonprofit, and I'm able to do that because of the program, because of the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I've been able to do a lot of things. I ended up going back to adult school when I was already 29, 28, 29 years old. I got clean at 24 years old. So I ended up going back, taking my GED, which I call good enough diploma, and got my GED, And I've always been in the financial industry, so I've been able to. One of the times that I started getting promoted, I used to manage collection agencies. Because when you manage collection agencies, you have the gift of gab. You're negotiating, you're talking on the phone, and that's what I found. And that for over 30 years, I did that. And one of the times that I got promoted to operations manager. One of the owners, the CEO, COO, actually, the chief operating officer, asked me to pick him up. He was coming from Chicago. And he said to me, he smiled, something came up on your record. And I said, really? He goes, yes, and I just want to talk about that. And I said, at the time I was 29 already. I had 5 years clean. And I told him, I said, you know what, Ron? I grew up in a rough neighborhood, gang infested, drugs, and I got caught up and I broke my anonymity with him. And I said, but I've been clean 5 years. I've been clean 5 years. And he goes, you know what, Ismail, you're a great worker. You're very disciplined, and everyone has skeletons in their closets. He told me like that. And he said, I just want you to continue doing what you're doing. This conversation is not going to take place anymore. And he gave me an opportunity. And that's where my career took off, And so by that time, I got promoted. I ended up buying my house in when I was 29 years old, 5 years clean. And, things started turning around. Things started turning around. One of the things that I always share about my son, my middle son, my middle son Mario. He's a combat veteran, and he's part of my recovery, because I used to see myself in him. Growing up, I used to see myself in him where he had a lot of anger. He started going to juvenile hall at 15. Then he didn't almost graduate, and then finally he did. He went to continuation, and then he ended up going to war. And he came back with PTSD, and when he came back, I introduced him to ceremony in East LA. I introduced him to East LA to some elders of ours that been clean for a lot of years. At the time they were clean about 30, 40 years. Now some of my elders are clean for 55, 60 years clean. Some of my elders that took me under their wing. And so I always talk about my son, where I had a lot of resentment towards him because I used to see myself in him. And right now, I have three kids. My oldest, he's clean. He's been clean for a couple of years now. My middle one, the one I was just talking about, he's been clean for a few months, a couple months. And then my daughter, she's never used, my daughter. But the girlfriend that I was talking about when I was 17 years old, became my wife, and we just celebrated in October. We celebrated 40 years, so she's been with me with those, through thick and thin, and the reason for that is because my wife knows the program. Her brother, which is my predecessor, he has 39 years clean. Today's his birthday, actually, July 16. I called him in the morning and wished him a happy birthday, and he got clean at 27. And today, he's a good man. He paved the road for a lot of our family to get clean, and that's as a result, I'm still clean. But going back to my wife, I traumatized my wife, because the way I was, I try to be present for her, and be good to her. I when I'm home, I work from I work I I'm not I work today I work for the county, of San Diego. I live in San Diego. I've been in San Diego for 35 years, and I work for the county of San Diego. I never thought I would work for government, but eventually, with being clean, there's a lot of hope, man. And I never thought I would do things that that I'm doing today. When my father was crossing over to the spirit world, I got called through a bank. A bank reached out to me. I interviewed with them, and I got hired. I eventually became the vice president of operations. That's crazy to say that. It's crazy, with no formal education, criminal record, growing up in housing projects. But you know what? Thanks to Narcotics Anonymous, one of the times what I did also, I sealed my record. I sealed my juvenile record, and I expunged my adult record, because I had GTA, I had drug possession, and one of the times that I petitioned to seal my record, my juvenile record, because I had invading police officers as well. I had that on my record, and I told my wife, I'm nervous. I'm nervous. That was, and this was 16 years ago. I told her I was nervous. I wanted, if she can go with me. So we went to LA. I waited in the lobby, and then until they called everybody else. And there was about 10 individuals that got, that got called. My wife couldn't get in there. She couldn't go into the courtroom to seal my juvenile record at Eastlake in LA. And then that was the first one he called. He said, "Mr. So-and-so, can you tell me why you're here?" And I said, actually, that was, yeah, that was about 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. I said, "Your Honor, I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here. I was here about 38 years ago with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, and she's sitting outside." I said, "I've been a homeowner for X amount of years. I've been in the same profession for 27 years. I've been in the 12-step program for 22 years." And then he goes, "Stop right there." He goes, "Stop right there." He goes, "Young man, whatever you're doing, continue doing it. You just raised the bar for everyone." And then he stamped my my juvenile record, and he sealed my record. The next day, we go to Temple Street, downtown LA, criminal building, and I'm there with my wife. We go again to seal my, now to go ahead and expunge and get information on my record, my adult record. And my the elevator opens, and a good friend of mine who's a defense criminal attorney, he goes, "Ismael, what are you doing here?" He's in a program, by the way. I came to look at my record because I have some, I wanna expunge. He goes, "Do you have any drug possessions?" I said, "Yes." He goes, "Okay, have them claim on Proposition 47 so they can drop it to a misdemeanor, and from the misdemeanor, you expunge it." I said, "Okay, no." I said, "Thank you, Tony." I said, he goes, "If you know where my office is, you got my phone number. If you need me, call me." I said, "All right." So I go up there. I sign my name. They call my name. This young girl, paralegal, she goes, "Okay." She goes, I got your information here. Let me go pull your record." There was about five cases, you know. She comes back up, and then she tells me, "Do you remember who I am?" I said, "No." She goes, "You guys used to party in my house when we were in high school." I said, "Sorry." I said, I don't know who, I don't remember." He goes, "Yes, until my house got shot up and my mom didn't want you guys there, right?" And I said, "By the way, this is my wife, you know." Then she tells me, "I still write to your brother. I know he's locked up, and I sent him money and so forth." And she goes, "I'm gonna take care of you." So she did all my paperwork, and that's how I was able to expunge my record, and this program, man, it's like you never, what is that movie, with the box of chocolates? You never know where you're gonna get, and but I love this program. This is our basic text. This is our basic text. And when you open up the book, the first page is blank, okay? But if you look at when you talk about our symbol, the first pair, the second paragraph of this talks about a word. When I first came to NA, I didn't know how to read, but when I would go to meetings, I would get the 12 traditions, the longest pamphlet, so I can read, and that's how I learned to read. And read clearly. So anyways, I fell in love with this word, the second paragraph, and it talks about esoteric. Esoteric, I didn't know what it meant. We didn't have phones back then. We had dictionaries. So my sponsor at the time used to say, "Get a dictionary and look up the word and then highlight it," So I look up that word, esoteric. And it means understood by a chosen few. And that's all of us in these rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. We are blessed, man, to be clean, to be members of productive members of this society. There's a lot of hope for you guys. Don't give up. A friend of ours who's my sponsee brother, I'm not mentioning his name, but he did 38 years straight, and now he's here in San Diego, clean. I gave him his token last year, and anything's possible, man. Another good friend of ours, he did 40 years straight. He was a lifer. He's out. He does ceremony, and he's clean. So anything's possible. Just give yourself a chance. Give yourself a chance, and wait for that miracle to happen. With that, I just want to say that I'm blessed, I'm grateful, and I wish you all luck. And hopefully we can meet one day, either in San Diego, LA, Arizona, wherever, because I go to conventions at times, and just real quick, I just want to say, a few years ago, I went to go speak in Guayabitos, Nayarit, and then from there we got invited to a prison in Puerto Vallarta, and we went to max security prison to share the message of Narcotics Anonymous, and that's what happens, that we go in there, share the message, H&I, dual service, and just give hope, and there's a lot of hope for a lot of you fellas, man. So hang in there, God bless, and thank you for sharing my experience, strength, and hope. Hope.
If you would like to speak directly with a member of Narcotics Anonymous, please contact our phone line at 844-991-AZN-A. Again, that's 844-991-2962.